Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the Mad Mamluks. My name is Muhammad.
My name is Amir.
My name is Sim.
Our guest today is Sister Yvonne Maffei, who started My Halal Kitchen in 2007 as an online resource for delicious and halal recipes with influences from her travels abroad to the Central Americas, Europe, and the Mediterranean. She grew up with a passion for cooking and writing and has since turned into a career. She has written two cookbooks that have simple everyday recipes, the first called Summer Ramadan Cooking and another which is coming out soon called My Halal Kitchen, Global Recipes, Cooking Tips, Lifestyle Inspiration. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Yvonne. Jazakallah khair for being here.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you do? What is My Halal Kitchen and how did it start?
Well, My Halal Kitchen is a food blog dedicated to teaching the home cook how to make any dish from any global cuisine halal.
When you say halal, what do you mean by that? Like, I don't want to get into the, you know, vertical cut anything, but what do you mean by what do you mean by halal?
Well, permissible, right? I mean, that's the Arabic word for what is permissible. So basically, I think to cut it, make it really simple and cut it short, dishes that don't have the alcohol in the pork. That's most common non-halal. Those are the most common non-halal ingredients we see in dishes from around the world. So I try to make recipes really simple for people to make, not have to sift through a recipe and figure out the substitutes. So they can try anything from Italian food to Cuban food to Greek food, you know, and really learn how to make those dishes without sacrificing flavor.
What do you do about the foods like, I don't know, French or other cuisines that are really heavy in, you know, alcohol or anything? What do you do about
like
those?
Yeah, like vanilla. I always have a problem with that at the grocery store.
Well, I have a chart on my website that has various substitutes for alcohol, different types of alcohol, and the appropriate substitutes that are halal and also very healthy substitutes for whatever it is that you're looking at in a recipe. For example, if a recipe calls for red wine, my go-to substitute is like a good high-quality grape juice. And if a recipe calls for something like white wine, then I would go with a really high-quality white grape juice. It really is that simple. There are books, you know, especially in French cuisine, that call for things that are like, you know, calvados, which is an alcohol made with apples. So in that case, I look at the core ingredient, which is apples, and take a halal substitute that is a little bit on the sweet side. And for example, in that case, I would substitute apple juice in the recipe. And surprisingly enough, dishes turn out wonderful, not too sweet, very flavorful, and you don't miss any of the alcohol in it.
Mm. How'd you get started? Do you have a culinary background?
No, I never went to culinary school. I tried many times and my parents kept saying, please just finish undergrad. Please finish graduate school. When I finished my undergrad, I never forget the phone call I had with my mom, and I said, okay, mom, I want to go to culinary school now. And she says, oh, no, I think you should just enter graduate school, get that degree, and then do whatever you want with food. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen with a culinary degree. And, you know, the voice of reason kicked in, and I ended up going to graduate school. But that passion for cooking, it was just always there. I was fascinated with food from a very young age. And not the eating part of it as much as how dishes are created, because there's so many elements. It's like orchestrating a symphony of the most amazing ingredients that are found all over the world, and they tell this story. And once you know, you put it all together and it tastes good, it's, you know, a big accomplishment. And serving that to people who say, that was delicious, it's more of a reward for me as a cook than it, I think, I'll ever get from anything else that I do. So getting that experience over and over and over again just makes me really happy.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is, you know, my mom, she loves cooking. And just like you said, she loves it when other people eat her food. Like, she doesn't care much for it. I mean, she'll eat anything, but she just, like, it's just, you get this like sense of pleasure from like other people eating it. And then, you know, especially when someone says like, oh, it's so good, you know, tell my mom, everyone loved it. You know, it was a killer.
His mom is an amazing cook.
Probably the best food I've ever had in my life. Yeah.
No, the best food I've had was your desserts.
So you were able to try them. That's really interesting.
Everything I can get my hands on. You know, I've had cherry pie.
And just a bunch of different ones. Cause you know, my friend, he's not a sweet tooth guy. So he just have it. And I'd go to him, you know, hey, do you have anything sweet? He's, you know, we have a ton. And then he'd just give it to me. All right. Just eat it right there. They were delicious. They were delicious. What were those for? I mean, you said you had a cookbook coming out, right?
Yeah. So I believe your friend is the sister of one of my former students who actually became my intern. And then I hired her to help me test and develop recipes for my next book that's coming out in July called My Halal Kitchen, Cooking Tips, Global Recipes, and Lifestyle Inspiration. And the book is divided into several parts, American cuisine, Latin cuisine, French cuisine, and Italian cuisine. And in each chapter, I talk about how to make classic recipes from those different areas halal, because they are some of the, you know, cuisines that are so delicious, and I grew up eating them and cooking them, but there's a lot of wine and quite a bit of alcohol and pork in those cuisines. So I just redid the recipes using halal substitutes. And so what you tasted were a lot of our test recipes.
They're delicious.
I'm so happy to hear that, because it's really important that we keep the integrity of the dishes. Everything must be delicious or it can't pass the test. I mean, what's the point of creating a recipe that isn't good, but also making it simple enough that people will want to make the dishes? Because I know in the Muslim community, we have people who are coming from all just wonderful ethnic backgrounds with good food of their own. So I really wanted to entice people to try something different that they may have never had before, because they, you know, couldn't go into a restaurant and order, you know, shrimp scampi because there's wine in it. But you can make it at home, make it for your family, make it for your friends, and just enjoy that dish.
It's so good, it tastes like naan zabiha. All right. For a lot of people who came from naan zabiha backgrounds and they became, or halal backgrounds, they talk, there's a lot of bad experiences they've had with some younger restaurants that just started up. And they'll say, you know, oh, halal never tastes that good, just because of their few experiences that they have with some of these new restaurants.
And that's going to happen, right? Because if there isn't the experience of cooking those dishes, you know, how do you really know how it's supposed to taste? And I grew up with a Sicilian grandmother who cooked a lot. They didn't eat a lot of pork in the family, but, you know, I went to Italy, I traveled through France and Spain, and I have tried a lot of these dishes, in a non-halal way. And so I know what it's supposed to taste like. So that's where I could gauge the difference. And I would see a lot of recipes substituting the alcohol for chicken broth and some vinegar. And I think, I don't want to cook like that. I just think that that's not I mean, it could work in a dish, but the sweetness of the fruit in the alcohol is actually what I think, you know, gives the dish some flair. So that's when I decided to go with the juices. And I know some chefs might say, well, that's going to be too sweet. But you just really have to try the recipes to see, you know, that it's if you just take it out, it's there's a difference.
Yeah.
And so I don't want anybody to have to suffer.
So what do? You take these recipes and you say, hey, this is delicious, but, you know, we can't eat it. I'm going to make it halal.
Yes.
That's what you
exactly.
do.
Exactly. Because I missed the food that I grew up on. Say, for example, I grew up on a lot of meatballs and spaghetti sauce.
Well, I'm sorry, what ethnicity are you?
My father was born in Sicily.
Okay.
So his entire side is Sicilian. Okay. And so every Sunday was dinner at my grandmother's and grandfather's house. And it was a spread of lasagna, spaghetti and meatballs, cutlets and salads and desserts and aperitifs. You know,
we see those Italian mobster movies and our stomach grumbles.
Yeah, there's if there's not a spread, then something's
Did
definitely
you ever,
wrong.
Slice a garlic with the razor blade, like in Goodfellas?
No. We are not the mafia.
Very, very thin. It melts in the oil.
No, we don't do that. But I would say that I am known to eat with a knife, like, yeah. You know, dip, you know, knife into a piece of fruit and eat it. And you know, if you're not Italian, I think that's a little scary for people. But I'm kind of used to that. But I never really cooked any of that food. I just tasted it and ate it. And I never really knew what was in any of it until I grew up. Later, I went to Italy, spent some time with my aunt there, and she really taught me how to shop in the markets and showed me what was in the food and, you know, where everything was coming from. And that just made me want to preserve my heritage. My mom's side is Puerto Rican, and so they cook with a lot of pork. And I didn't realize, you know, until, again, much later, because my mom didn't want me in the kitchen cooking. She said, your job is to study. I'm going to cook. But later on, come to find out that some of that stuff my grandmother was bringing from Puerto Rico was, you know, made with a lot of pork. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, just because I'm Muslim now, I became Muslim in 2001.
Oh, wow.
Alhamdulillah.
After 9/11 or before 9/11?
A month before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Great introduction you got. Welcome to Islam.
Yeah.
Trial by fire.
It was, yeah, that was something.
How was that for your family?
Well, shocking would be an understatement, but I think they kind of knew that something was happening because I when I was in college, I had a real interest in everything Middle Eastern. I don't know what it was. I think it's all the food, number one, and all the beautiful, you know, parts about the culture. I had a lot of friends from the Middle East when I was in college. And, but I was never a very religious person. I grew up Catholic, but I would say, you know, I just had this spirituality, but I really wasn't gung-ho. I was much more interested in people and how they live and what they eat. That's always been my interest and passion. And so having all these friends from everywhere, you know, Palestine, Qatar, Indonesia, Malaysia, Saudi Arabia, everybody kind of coming together and showing their beautiful cultures, but they were all connected by Islam, really just kind of made me say, you can't ignore something really great happening there. Yeah. And I took a trip to Morocco when I was a student in Spain studying, and I was only there for 3 days, but it was Ramadan when I went. I had no idea what that meant. I had zero clue as to why no one in the world was eating all day.
Yeah.
Well, that's strange. But at night, they're such night people, these Muslims. later on, you know, things started to sort of make sense. And then so my family kind of started to see that I was really interested in this thing that was not usual for me, which was opening up the Bible, opening up the Quran, and kind of reading both and giving justice to both, which was, you know, not something I'd really ever thought I would do, to be really all that interested in theology. But I found that, it, you know, Quran was so straightforward and so beautiful. And by the end of reading both, I had made my decision. And so, you know, some family members took it really well and others not. But, you know, that's to be expected. I think that the biggest thing was, quite honestly, food. Because the biggest question was, and this is funny, maybe it only happens in Italian families. Oh, my God, you're going to have to eat kebabs now? You're not going to be able to eat lasagna. You're not going to be, what are we going to feed you? That was the question they all had and all worried about was, what do we feed you when you come over?
Yeah.
And I would say, I don't know, just some fish is fine. Or because their notion was, now you have to eat like them. Mm-hmm. And you have to get rid of your culture. And so all my alarm bells were kind of going off thinking, do I? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, because all the Muslims that I knew were from the Muslim world. And so it wasn't until much later, after moving and coming to Chicago and like really figuring out that there was this whole Tayyib thing, and like you got to really look at the source of the food and what halal really meant, it liberated me to say, oh, if that's the case, then I can have some lasagna, but it can't be mixed. Obviously, it can't be mixed, you know, the meat, the beef can't be mixed with with pork, obviously. But I can get some really great, the biha halal veal. I mix it with beef and figure out how my grandmother made this stuff from scratch, and I'm going to knock their socks off. And that's the kind of stuff that I started to do, was to say, you know, come on over, have a meal, and then make food that was from the our culture, whether it was the Sicilian side or the Puerto Rican side. And they'd say, I didn't know you could eat that. Well, guess what? Here starts the conversation about what is halal, what is dhabiha, what is Islam? Because for me, again, like I always go back to the fact that I'm not really all that comfortable with the religious conversations.
Yeah.
I really feel, and I still feel this, that it's so personal, the conversation. It's still so private to me about my choices. But wearing a hijab, obviously, you can't, you don't have that luxury of saying, you know, hey, don't ask me any questions. I mean, you have to, and that's okay. Yeah. But food was my way, my bridge of kind of like neutralizing everybody's emotions to say, isn't it good? Do you like it? Well, you know, I made it this way. And then what had started to happen was, especially on my mom's side, the Puerto Rican side, they really started to appreciate the fact that these recipes were being resurrected. And, oh, your grandmother used to make this. We haven't had this in years. And that just really touched me, because not only I wasn't doing it really to show anything more than I love cooking. I want to make these dishes. I don't want them to go away, and I can make them halal. And that's very exciting. Yeah. So it's been very special.
Did you notice, as you see, like, for example, the kebab, right? The mm-hmm. kebab is from India to mm-hmm. all of North Africa. Everyone has their own variation. It seems like people of all these different cultures can just unite on one item like that with their own variation. Right. That's something beautiful about Islam, that it's kind of bringing people together through just food, you know, mm-hmm. and we have like our own different versions of samosas now. If you go to a lot of parties at different people's homes and stuff, they have their own completely different version of a samosa.
Mm-hmm. You know, what other thing that I realize is, I know some people that are amazing cooks. And they're awesome culinary artists, and the better they are at cooking or putting something together, the more they like to feed people. That's a commonality that I realized. Like my father-in-law, he's an amazing cook, but he loves feeding people, right? For instance, Moga's mother, she's an amazing cook and she loves feeding people, right? And that goes to many cultures also, but Islam has a very awesome twist to that also.
Yes.
Is that if you go to, if any of us speak Spanish, they say when they would eat, they would say salud, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning it's, you eat to health. Mm-hmm. In the Muslim countries, and this is from the Islamic culture, while they feed you, they say bisihha wal afiyah. Sihha wal afiyah means like good health and well-being. Right. Mm-hmm. And this is what they saw it as, something as healing your guest, right? Not just feeding them and making them feel good. It's just Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala spoiled us by making food taste delicious.
Yeah.
Right. But originally it's for survival. It's a survival thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And, they say siha wal afiyah, and the preparer of food, at least, you know, some of the scholars of purification of the soul, when they talk about preparation of food, they would say there's an intention that goes into this, because your intention is what's going to heal the person.
Yeah.
Right? So a lot of it has to do with the intention of the person also. They want to feed people. They want to make people happy. And you see, when people eat their food, they become happy.
Yeah.
Right? And a lot of it has to do with their intention. We can't, you know.
And just the way the food even looks like, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you feel about how, like, if you go on Food Network or any of these channels, how food is just so art related now.
The presentation, right?
Yeah. Does that upset you? For me, as a foodie, I kind of like, all right, let's just make sure it tastes good first before you're worried about how it looks like.
You know, I think it's a great thing that people are interested in food today, no matter what. I mean, if it takes that to get people interested in food and cooking, all the better. I mean, I'm all for the art of it. I'm all for, you know, the heirloom varieties of vegetables and fruits that aren't perfect, but they're artistic in their own way because they just come straight from the earth. So it's all in you know, what you perceive as beautiful. But I think that probably needs to be done on TV to get people interested.
Yeah.
And the more people are interested in good food, I think the better our whole society could be, because, you know, when you think about it, you know, if you don't eat well, you're just not happy. You're crabby. Yeah. You're upset. You're, you know, at least I am. I need to eat. And I really don't feel well when I don't eat well. I think that's just, I used to think it was just me, but I'm hearing that it's not.
No, it's not.
It's we are what we eat. We truly are. And so put good things in your body and, you know, you see a reaction of your body to those things. So I feel like, and there's so much barakah in the food that you get from halal sources, that when your house is full of people or, you know, or just one or two, there's always enough. And I think like there's something very interesting about that.
So we talked about you becoming Muslim, and at what year did you started exploring professionally this whole food thing?
Yeah, I would probably say if we can go back to my teens for a minute, because I always knew that I had to do something with food, but also with writing, because I pretty much excelled at writing in school, but I didn't know where that would take me. I just thought my teachers would always say, you know, you should do something with the written word, you know, go to law school or something. And I thought, yeah, I need something more beautiful in my life. I was always enchanted by beauty. And I think magazines were just the one thing that I could get lost in. Since I was probably 15 or 16, I had the subscriptions to Savour magazine, Gourmet, Martha Stewart Living. And my parents really kind of nurtured that, because they would say, you know, by the time I got a little older and I started dabbling in the kitchen, I had a camera since I was probably 7 or 8. And my dad started saying, you know, take a picture of that. That's beautiful. And so I still have some pictures of food that I made when I was in high school. And, you know, when I think about it, you know, food photography is so big right now. But the seed was planted very, very young. And before I went off to college, I wrote letters to Savour and Gourmet magazine asking how I could work for them. And they wrote back. I think they thought it was probably cute. You know, get a little experience first before you try to work for us. You need to have some experience under your belt. But before the world of blogs and websites, you know, that was very, very difficult to be a freelance writer for a food magazine. I mean, you really had to, you know, get a backpack, go across the world, you know, travel. You really had to like take bigger risks than now to do that thing. So that's why my parents were saying, you know, go to college, you're going to need to do that. So I took every opportunity possible to study abroad, because I knew that if I could get to those other countries, then I could figure out how people were eating. And that was like really fascinating to me. So while I was learning languages and studying all of that, I would just, you know, talk to especially the older women that were, you know, that I would come in contact with. Well, how do you make that? What are you doing? What are you cooking?
They have so many secrets, right?
Yeah. And the markets.
They don't want to tell them. I know my aunties, they never tell their secrets.
Well, the aunties don't, but
I'm like, Mom, can you cook like them? They're like, no, they won't tell me how to make it.
Well, I was fortunate enough that I had people who, and I still have written recipes from people that I met in Spain, in Mexico, in Italy, who wrote down their recipes for me.
Those things are gold, huh?
Yeah. And in fact, the paella recipe that's in my upcoming book comes from notes that I had from 20 years ago when the host family that I was staying with took me out to the countryside, and showed me how they made paella out in the countryside. And they wrote, her brother wrote the recipe for me.
What is paella?
Paella is a Spanish rice dish with, it has seafood. And then they put chorizo in it, which is pork. Uh-huh. But I have a halal substitute in my cookbook. So it's it's the rice dish of Spain, basically. So professionally speaking, you know, I didn't know how to get there, but I just kept, how can I do this? And, you know, but I didn't really want to go to a restaurant setting. I thought, I like the idea of a restaurant, but I personally would be really antsy to be there 12 hours a day. I know what it takes to, I've worked in a restaurant and I know you have to be there 24/7 pretty much. That dedication is necessary. And I wanted to be out in the world and I wanted to, you know, write about it too. So how do you combine the two things? And, one book that really kind of did it for me was a book called We'll Write for Food by Diane Jacob. And the reason I'm telling you this is because there's an irony to the whole story. In her book, Diane Jacob writes about the ways that you can make a dream happen in combining writing and food, whether that's blogging or writing for these wonderful magazines, or, you know, being the Martha Stewart of your neighborhood. I don't know. But she really kind of, it's like a guidebook. And I remember reading this book. When I finished it, I closed it up and I said, if I don't do this now, I don't, you know, I will, I don't, who knows when the chance will be. But I knew that she gave the clues as to how to put it all together. And so, that was a time when I was teaching and I was just finishing up the school year. And I think that was the point where I decided, you know, to figure out how blogs work. Because I was getting a lot of feedback at school from students, from teachers, that the food was good. And then the blog world was just kind of emerging. And I thought, well, I can try that and see if I put stuff out in the world, see what happens. Cause that's the only way I can do it pretty much for free or, you know, next to nothing. So here we are 8 years later, and Diane Jacob, the author of that book, wrote, a blurb on the cover of my next book.
Oh, oh wow.
Yeah.
SubhanAllah.
So SubhanAllah, you know how, you know, I really do believe if you put your mind to something, you know, Allah, it's like that, you know what dua you're asking for from Allah, and somehow, some way, yeah, it starts to.
And when I was going through your website, I think that's just what Muslims, that's what's expected from them. But you've kind of went above and beyond that principle when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells us in the Quran, and he's addressing all of human beings, when he says, Ya ayyuhan nas, he says, eat from halal and tayyib, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just a general command for everybody. And everyone should be eating halal and tayyib.
Yes.
But what you've actually done is, and it seeps over to other things, and I wanted to discuss that also, but you've actually gone to other dishes that contain things that aren't halal and made them halal for people because of your zeal and because you like and you want people to enjoy food, right? And that's something awesome. So it's kind of like overturning a whole bunch of rocks for people and then presenting it to them. And for individuals like that, you know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he opens up doors for them, you know? And the other thing I realized when I was going through your website is that you have other things that have to do with health and well-being, as you know, as we talk about the word tayyib, right? Like the soy candles, making the soy candles, and how to sleep, and just these healthy, holistic things. And it's as if the food, because you are so concerned about pure and halal food, the concern just started carrying over in many other things. And that the website is a, has a wealth of information regarding holistic and pure things, you know? So, I would say you should keep on expecting these things because, you're making it a lot easier for everybody else, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. I was on your website and then I started with one recipe.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Four links later, you're writing about a bed. I was like, I need this bed.
Good. Please buy it.
The bed?
Yeah. Yeah, she writes about, like other things. It's not just food.
Well, oh, wow. Yeah, that sort of morphed, you know, after several years, because what I realized was that I can provide the recipes, but people want to know where to get everything. And so number one, the resources were really important to share. You know, I wanted to make it easy for people to find the ingredients in those recipes. And I'm a very curious person. So, I feel like, you know, I'll go to any market, any store, and figure out where I can find a particular ingredient that's going to be easy for people to get. But that is one part of the equation, as you said. I think, the more that I thought about it, I thought, well, I have so much inside of me that I want to share. And here I am, you know, making like, you know, homemade skincare for myself that I think is healthy. Why not share that? So I feel like whenever I would find something good, I just really felt the passion to share it. And then I realized, you know, in the Muslim community, there is that desire very much so to not just to be healthy, but to figure out how they can, you know, take care of their family, their kids, their spouses, their, you know, parents. And so the information does have a tendency to spill over, into even the travel part. You know, where can you go to have a wholesome getaway that you don't have to like feel like you're constantly saying, oh, like, you know, we don't want to take our kids to that, or we don't want to be surrounded with this.
Yeah, because it's stressful. That's stressful.
Yeah.
You go to get away and then you have to worry about all these other things. Mm-hmm. And you went to a vacation to forget about all that stuff, you know, but yeah.
Yeah. So
when was the idea of My Halal Kitchen kind of formed?
Oh, okay. So I came to Chicago after getting married in 2002, from Ohio. I'm originally from Ohio. And then I started the website in 2008. So I had been teaching at various Islamic schools for about 6 years, I guess.
So you were a teacher?
I was a teacher. Yeah. Actually in your neighborhood here.
Awesome.
I taught, girls first at a boarding school, and then I taught, junior high and high school.
What subjects?
I taught American history, British history, American literature, British literature, language arts, and then some cooking on the side. Well, that the girls' boarding school was really interesting because that's where a lot of the ideas kind of flourished, where I would see the kids getting so excited about a certain brand of chips that would be halal, and they would come running in my room screaming, "Guess what? These are halal." And I'm like, "How do you know that?" "Well, we called the company, we figured it out." And I'm like, "Okay, that's great, but not the healthiest thing to have." They would say, "Well, don't burst our bubble. You know, there's only so many things we can have." And so I talked with the principal about doing some cooking and, you know, things with the girls, because here they are very young. And I thought, at this young age, you really need to know how to eat healthy. And, knowing how to cook is more of a survival skill than it is about saying, you know, your place is in the kitchen. That's not what I was advocating, yeah. And I'll never advocate that.
It's such a careful balance that you have to use, especially these days where we have so many different type of people who are trying to, you know, raise women's mm-hmm. voices. And then, from your perspective, you're kind of like, you have My Halal Kitchen, and you're not saying that women's place is in the kitchen, but you're trying to just advocate halal food. But, mm-hmm. You know how it is, yeah. Right?
I never really thought of it it would have to be a careful balance, because in my mind, I was never advocating that, but I could see where people might think that that's where it's going to go. And I'm all about survivability and being healthy. And I think that what's really interesting, and I'm so happy to see it, is that when I go to events or book signings or whatever, there are a lot of brothers who come to the table
and
say, "I'm cooking from your book. My wife got the book for me." And I'm like, "Yes, it's working." Because, you know, it takes two to really have a healthy household.
Yeah.
And if one person is doing all this to create healthy meals and the other one has no idea what's going on or no appreciation for it, it's really difficult to sustain all the things that need to happen to eat healthy and be a healthy family. And so I think, and it's fun to see that men are cooking mm-hmm. and they're appreciating it. And so she's, you know, she doesn't have to worry about that. I think it's a great thing. And I've seen that quite a bit in a lot of my events. So I'm glad that the message is, you know, they're seeing that that's the message, that it's about being healthy and, you know, having the skills necessary. Cause I try to put a lot of things like techniques on the website too, not just recipes, but, you know, how to saute perfectly, or how to, you know, how to properly wash certain types of produce, or what is braising all about? Because these are things that you don't hear about every day, even on some of the Food Network shows. I mean, they're dealing with usually, you know, a certain recipe, but I really feel passionate about teaching the aspects of cooking, you know, so that you can feel powerful enough to do it in your own kitchen.
I'm guessing if men are doing it, the recipes aren't too complicated, huh?
I try to keep them really simple.
Okay. When you say saute, all I do is, and I love it this way, maybe there's a better way of doing it, but I just take like a Kerrygold, the grass-fed source butter. Mm-hmm. That's the only butter I use now.
With the plug.
Not at all. I just love it.
They're a sponsor.
With onions, mushrooms, and bell peppers. And that's all I use. And a little bit of salt and pepper sometimes, mm-hmm. you know? That's, I don't, that's all I use now. I don't want to use anything else. When I'm asked to add ingredients, I was like, no, this is what it worked. This is what works. This is all I'm going to stick to.
Do you know how to properly wash the mushrooms?
Wait, you wash mushrooms?
I wash them, but there's,
you know where they grow, right?
there's a fungus. Tip on my website. You have to look it up.
No, we will check it out.
Way I do it. Some people just use a brush, but I don't do that. Don't want dirt.
Is it possible that one thing you could tell us so it can encourage them to go to the website, like, because they're gonna find a lot of cool things there. Mm-hmm. They're gonna find a wealth of things.
The one thing.
Yeah. If there's one thing that would give them a good incentive to go there, and they should be going there.
There's so many. One of my favorite articles, it's an old one now, but I think it's so relevant. And this will be for our, our thinkers of the group. It's an article called The Food Revolution for Muslims. It's sort of a call to say, you know, what are we doing? How are we eating? Why are we doing it? And here's what we need to do to get on board. Meaning, go back to the sunnah, go back to what Allah says in the Quran about eating and that it's so good for us. Do you know how many non-Muslims actually visit the site? And I'm so happy about that because that's awesome. I never wanted people to feel like they're not included, but I have to say it's halal because that's what it is and that's me and that's how I cook. But I never wanted anyone to feel, you know, that they couldn't be part of it. And so I'm really happy that there are a lot of people visiting the site who just come because they say they love the transparency of halal.
Yeah.
Not me. It's what halal means. It's what, you know, these, like, I'll talk about a lot of different brands and where things are coming from, you know, visit the farms and talk about, you know, the process of bringing the animal from farm.
And even like non-Muslim, like friends, like my non-Muslim friend, he's inviting my family over and he's making sure everything is halal.
And that's great.
He's going to make sure that his grill is prepared so that, you know, there's no cross contamination of anything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's almost a form of dawah in itself where I didn't have to tell him anything, but he knows that much that we eat halal and he was making sure that he's prepared for that, you know?
Yeah, that's great. And there's so many people. I get a lot of emails from people who say, I'm having my Muslim neighbors over for dinner. Can you please tell me what I should watch out for? And I think that's so nice that they do that. And we really have to take care of those people because they could be very different and thinking very differently. And they're not. They're really saying, I really want to respect, you know, how you eat. And I cherish that. I think one time I haven't had that much mail that was negative over all these years, alhamdulillah. But one time I had one person, I think it was a farmer. He sent me a really terrible message. And I can't even remember what it was in relation to. But I sent an email back to him, you know, just saying, you know, I think that perhaps you don't really understand. And maybe I haven't done a good enough job of explaining what halal really means. And, you know, let me go ahead and write about that. And then I'm going to send you the link. And so you can kind of, you know, be more informed. He was so nice about that. And he apologized and he was like, thank you. You know, you explained it better. But I thought, you know, there's something, there's like, this was very early I think the first year that I wrote the site. So I started a series called, you know, Myths About Halal. And that was important because I really didn't think the way some people were thinking about what halal means. Like some people thought, you know, we do voodoo over animals. And I'm like, where would you get that notion? And some, you know, it is something that people practice in the world. But that's not what we do. So we need to unravel that and we need to explain it clearly. Or, you know, the cruelty.
Yeah.
That's a really big thing. And we can't just say, no, we're not cruel to animals. We have to explain this is how we do it, how it's supposed to be done. And that explanation should really be self-explanatory. And I've witnessed it myself. So I can say, you know, I have seen the mercy and humanity behind the halal processing. Yeah,
for our listeners, if you haven't heard Sajid Khan from Fatima Brand Hot Dogs, that he came on our show and he talked about all these different ways of how much more humane halal is.
Mm-hmm. He even had a good number of non-Muslims that actually bought from him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I believe that. I think that there's a lot of people who, they go vegan or vegetarian for reasons of animal cruelty.
Exactly.
And they don't maybe know enough about halal yet. So they come to the site to learn more and, you know, that we can be a really good resource.
Sister Yvonne, you eventually got to your first book. Mm-hmm. How can you tell us about how that whole process started?
Oh, okay. Well, I always knew that I wanted to write a cookbook, on halal. And I thought, well, where do I start? Because there's so much I want to say. I was approached about doing an app for Ramadan, and it was a very short timeline to get the recipes out and get the pictures taken and everything. And, a lot of it was already done, but, you know, recipes need to be retested and, the food needs to be styled. And so it's a process, but I thought, well, if we're going to do it for the app, let's do it for a book. But the problem was I didn't have a publisher. That takes time. You need an agent, you need a publisher, you need a proposal. There's so much that goes into getting a book published by a publisher. So I looked into publishing it myself and thought, you know, I'll take a big leap of faith here and do that, because there wasn't another book in English about Ramadan. And I knew that was kind of like really, really, really specific. But we have four seasons, and here we are, like, it was summertime, and I'm thinking, you can't just have a blanket, recipe list for Ramadan. It needs to be specific to summer, because we have such a long fasting day. We really need to talk about things that are hydrating and healthy and diverse, because we're in America. Not everybody is from a particular ethnic group, and I personally like to try all different types of things. And I think in Ramadan, we're very interested in the traditional and the new. It's kind of interesting, right? Like, we want certain traditional things, and then we want to, you know, mix it up and try. So I just gathered all my resources about publishing, you know, finding a designer, finding a printer, finding the paper, finding all that stuff that goes into a book, and took all my own photos. And I think I brought my mom in for a little bit to help out with the, you know, hold this here, don't move, I got to take this photo, you know, that type of thing. And in 3 months, I was able to kind of pull it all together. But years of having the recipes also done. But finally, we were able to get the actual physical product done. And so it's here, right here. And then I published a second edition just to kind of add a couple more recipes and, you know, just kind of, you know, make it a little better.
And is that available like on your website, or is it?
Yes, it's available. So it got really interesting because as technology advanced, we were able to offer it not just in paperback.
Oh, for our listeners, it's called Summer Ramadan Cooking.
Yes, right. Summer Ramadan Cooking, recipes and resources for healthy meals all month long. So it's in paperback here, but then we also have it, you're able to offer it on Kindle, on Amazon Kindle, for the iPad readers.
And you did all this yourself, getting it on Kindle and in an electronic format?
Yeah, the first year I did, and the second time around.
Mashallah.
You make us feel like amateurs. I feel like I worked hard for the past weeks. And
I had excellent designers to help with they were very patient. I mean, I never really did this before. I didn't know what the softwares I needed. And then the second time around, you know, my web designers, he's awesome. And he really was able to help me, you know, get things on the iPad. He was the one who suggested, well, you got to be on iPad. And I'm like, there's so many things you have to be on. But it's good. It's good if we can offer the different varieties, because people, you know, what I realize is I could never cook from an electronic device because it will be covered in water and cake batter. And I'm just not the neatest cook in the world. Yeah. I will admit it. But that's why I kind of like the spiral, because you could, you know, do this. But some people really love electronic devices. Yeah. So we had to be there. So we will be wherever people want to be.
Awesome.
What are some challenges you faced, you know, starting with the blog and just this whole journey? Well, it couldn't have been smooth the whole way, right?
No, it was not. It still isn't. I mean, nothing good comes easy, as they say. And it's a real test of what you really want to do with your time and your life, I think. The technology was has always been the biggest challenge. I remember the first year of writing the blog, you know, keep in mind, it started from like a tiny little thing that wasn't very good. And I'm also my worst critic. I think about all kinds of things like photos and stuff, but the pictures needed a lot more light and things like that. I was so happy when I moved from the first style of blog to the second style. And I moved to a new host and I thought, you know, I'm really like, it's looking better. It's looking brighter, it's shaping up to be the way I wanted. And then, I don't need, you know, web designers and things like that. I'll do it all myself. And, I went to the back end to change one thing and I deleted the entire blog after a year of working. So, I had a moment of just, okay, what just happened? This can't be real, you know? And I contacted my host company and they're like, you deleted it. Like, we can't
get
the files.
What button is that? So I don't press it. I just want to make sure.
Who makes that button?
I think it was the published to internet, but I don't know. It was one of those like one buttons that I should not have touched. And so I thought to myself, I don't think I ever prayed istikhara about starting this blog. I just went forward and did it. Maybe I should have prayed istikhara. I didn't even think about it. And then I thought, that's asking Allah's permission, really. Do you, you know, is this good for me? Is this good for my deen? Good for my dunya? Should I go ahead? And I thought, well, it can't hurt. I really, you know, you can always pray istikhara anytime. And so I went back and I prayed istikhara and I just said, Ya Allah, if this is something you really think I should spend my time and my life doing, because I am so invested in it as a career and I don't want to look back, you know, please just help, you know, do something about this. And so a few hours later, I got a message from the hosting company and they said, we don't know how, but we got the entire site back up. We were able to retrieve all the files we can't get all the pictures. And I'm like, that's fine. Cause they weren't all that good. I need to redo them. But from there, it was like, subhanAllah, smooth sailing until I got hacked by someone from China. And then we had another problem. That was a few years later. And
we're worried about Chinese hackers stealing our technology and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're
real.
They're stealing your recipes.
You're always going to have that part, right? But now, you know, one thing, I always have my web guy, and I hired a web guy who's just, he protects it really well and, you know, keeps all the doors locked all the time. So, you know, we never know what can happen, but I think that was a real lesson for me that, number one, good things don't come easy. It's a real test of, is this what I really want to do with my time and my life? Because for me, I don't see a division between life and work.
Yeah.
It's just, this is what I love to do. It's who I am. And I'm 100% invested in it for the long haul. And I, it's a privilege. It's not a right. So in order to keep doing it, I have to keep plugging because this is how I want to spend my time.
Yeah. That's an ibadah, you know, that the thing that you're doing, mashallah, and we have to see it that way. And with every time you start something new, you're going to be tested, you know. Mm-hmm. Allah says, "Inna ma'al usri yusra," with hardship comes ease. Mm-hmm. But that's a hardship that you had. What about since the cookbook is named after Ramadan, and there's a lot of women, especially during Ramadan, they go through a lot of hardship. Mm-hmm. And we want to try to kind of help alleviate that through you, inshallah. Mm-hmm. That some women that even I know of, they'll be in the kitchen in Ramadan for like 6 hours preparing a meal out of their good nature, but it gets too much and they can't mm-hmm. make the most of Ramadan. Mm-hmm. So right. What is it? Can you give us a little bit, maybe, or a tip of somebody they can do something in an hour and it'll still taste delicious and it'll be very, you know, satiating. It'll be very fulfilling. Mm-hmm. Something like, is there something like that you can just give us? even if it's one thing, you know, so the listeners can, you can
give them a heads up. Hammer is always fighting for the woman's cause.
No, I think it's just something, it's ibadah. I mean, a lot of times, no, if you think about it, there's some people, I went to India, I visited India and I was in Ramadan. Like some women, they never get a chance to do any type of ibadah in Ramadan because all they do is cook, you know, and they don't even know what Ramadan is like.
Yeah. And that's not the point of it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I know that, you know, we post always about food, and especially in Ramadan, we love to share, you know, our food pictures, but that's not what it's about, obviously. So in Ramadan, I always try to write a post on being efficient in the kitchen. You know, your kitchen is like this workspace that you have to really, evaluate and see where can I make things, easier for myself, cleaner, simpler, neater, so that, you know, you're working it. It's not working you. Yeah. And I've had to learn that the hard way over the years. I mean, I used to be much more of a mess. And now I think, you know, as I get less and less time to do the things I want to do, I've learned to be more efficient. So I try to pass on those tips, but you don't want to cut so many corners that you're not eating healthy. I mean, we're fasting, but it's also very serious to feed the body good and nourishing food during non-fasting hours. So one tip I would have, and I think, we always pay so much attention to iftar, but what about suhoor? Because if I miss it, I'm like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. Because, you know, I need that meal to feel like I can function during the day. I mean, and it's a sunnah to have that meal.
At least a glass of water.
And I don't know how people do it with like, you know, they get up and have a cup of tea or something. I'm like, you know, first of all, that's dehydrating, and you know, you have to nourish this body of yours. So one tip I have for people is to prepare the night before, always, whatever it takes, but make sure you make it easy for yourself to have suhoor ready in the morning. For example, we like to have a lot of leftovers. Like if I have, you know, some people don't like meat in the morning. I personally like a little protein for suhoor. But let's say eggs. I make the batter the night before, put everything in the batter, even a, you know, pat of butter so that it goes right into the pan. I mean, I'm half awake, you know, but eggs left over aren't that good. But if you have that batter ready to go, you just put it in a hot pan and you're going to have eggs in like 5 to 7 minutes. Or if you do have those leftovers that you're going to reheat, you know, put them nicely in the fridge, label them if you have to. And if someone else gets up before you, they can just stick them in the microwave or heat them up. We do that a lot because sometimes one person gets up and the other one doesn't. So make it easy. So they're not asking you, where's this and what's this and what can we eat? You know, you really have to, it's like getting ready for work the next day. Yeah. The best preparation is the night before. And I think that's really important for suhoor.
What's a good or a halal recipe that people can have as soon as they break their fast, they go to the gym? So they don't want to be too...
something light?
You mean? Yeah, something light or
with
something
protein,
like
a, something nourishing.
Especially with our foods, they're really heavy. And it's hard to, you know, to go to Tarawih first off, to pray, because it's most important. It's hard to pray.
Because the Mola prays all night and all day.
No, but, you know, it's like, it's really heavy food, though. Mm-hmm. And then so it's like, and then you only have that limited window, I think, from Maghrib to Isha.
And it makes it difficult to pray.
It makes it really hard. It makes it really hard.
It makes it really hard. And the worst thing you can do is have so much food that you're just so heavy. So I really like shakes that have a lot of fiber in them and not too sweet. You know, I have a recipe for a date shake in my cookbook, because I feel like we're going to have dates anyway.
Awesome.
Right? And sometimes you kind of get tired of just having one or two dates. But if you stick them in the blender with whole milk, we know milk is like a meal, right? That's like wholesome milk, organic milk is going to fill you up for a good long time. So add a few dates to that. You know, maybe add a little cinnamon or something, you know, just for spice. But, you know, that can get you through breaking the fast, having workout until you come home, and maybe have something light like a salad, grilled chicken, you know, something like that. But I don't advocate having just that for the whole night, just to kind of hold you over. I mean, how many of us have been in the car when it was time to break your fast and you have like one or two dates, and then until you, like another hour do you get to something? It's kind of that's hard.
Yeah, I'm usually looking for peanuts in between the
seats. Something crunchy. Something crunchy, right? We all need to satiate ourselves. Yeah. And I think in the summertime, I do a lot of drinks that are, with fruits, a lot of watermelon drinks, a lot of pineapple drinks, like pineapple lemonade. We have a lot of good smoothie drinks on the website.
That just sounds
spinach,
good, right?
Spinach, avocado, yeah. Mix it together with some strawberries. Excellent. You don't even taste the
spinach.
No way.
I never thought
about
that.
You said spinach, avocados, and what?
Strawberries. So you have a little bit of sweet. You have texture from the avocado, and then you have the greens from the spinach. It is so good. And I would have that for suhoor, for iftar, anything.
Wow. But you just made me look forward to Ramadan.
Yep.
Normally, I don't look forward to
it. Oh, no.
Just kidding. That's just a joke, okay?
You know, use stuff that's in season. Use stuff that's local to your where you live. I always tell people, go to farmers markets in your neighborhood. You're not fasting in the morning, so Saturday morning, get up, go to the farmers market, buy the fresh stuff, unless you grow it yourself. Take it home, and you know, there's such a difference in food that is grown locally, grown organically. It's nutrient dense. It's truly tayyib.
It's a huge difference. I have a friend. He had an orange tree down in Florida, and I had one of those oranges, and it was the best orange I've had in my life.
Really?
Yeah,
it's going to satiate you much differently and more than something that's not.
Yeah.
And I think there's some studies about that too, right? Like, you should have honey that's local to your vicinity.
Absolutely.
Because of the pollen. It's relative to you.
Yes.
And the yogurt
if you have
should
allergies.
Be local, you know? I mean, it's for optimal health, I guess, you know?
Yes, because if you're allergic to whatever's going on in the air in your area, you should have the local honey.
Yeah.
Because the bees are pollinating what's local and the honey is it helps you fight off those.
A question I had for you is, you know, for anyone interested in either culinary school or something, what would you tell them? I mean, you can't avoid, you know, pork or alcoholic ingredients. What do you do about that?
You can.
How?
Well, I visited some culinary schools here in Chicago when I first started the website because I had that same question and I wanted to pass it on to readers. First thing you need to do is talk to admissions and say to them, you know, I don't eat pork and I don't drink alcohol and I can't touch my food. What can I do? And a good school is going to tell you, here's how we can talk to the teacher chefs and maneuver around it. I had a bad experience with one school who was like, no, that's not possible. But another school, in fact, the French pastry school of Chicago was awesome about that. They said to me, whatever you need. If you need to avoid alcohol and all the baking or whatever, we will absolutely do that. We'll find a substitute for you that's halal. So they were excellent about that. And any school should be. Yeah. Now at that time, this is 8 years ago, they were still looking at halal as, very, like almost exactly like kosher. So they had some students that were kosher, you know, following kosher diets and, they could either accommodate it or they couldn't. So a good school is going to accommodate it for you. It's not that difficult. And if they think it's difficult, they can call me and we can have a little talk about that
Sister
and figure
Yvonne,
it out.
We'll set them straight.
Well, I mean, I think it's just a matter of understanding that it's not that difficult to accommodate.
And we're not the only ones who don't eat pork, Jewish people. We always forget about that.
Yeah.
We're not the only ones who don't eat pork.
Yeah. And for people who think that alcohol burns off in cooking, it doesn't.
Oh, man.
It does not burn off in cooking. And there are studies about that. Even America's Test Kitchen had scientists interviewed and who said there's still a trace amount of alcohol. Well, some people might still eat it. That's up to them. But scientifically, it doesn't. And so avoid it. And now with all the substitutes that we offer, there's no reason.
Yeah.
To eat it.
You had, now you're coming up on another book, right?
Right.
You're about to publish.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about the new book.
So the new book is called My Halal Kitchen, Cooking Tips, Global Recipes, and Lifestyle Inspiration. And it's the book that I wanted to cook from because it's separated into your sort of fundamental recipes like bread, pizza dough, pie crust, yogurts, flavored yogurts, and cheeses, and then four different cuisines, American, Italian, French, and Latin. and the starters, the main dishes and desserts and drinks from each of those cuisines. Taking a look at the classic recipes and making them halal. So for example, pasta carbonara, shrimp scampi, beef bourguignon is in there. That's a cool. classic French dish.
What's but a beef bourguignon? Sorry, I don't know what that is.
Beef bourguignon is Julia Child made the dish famous. Actually, it's a classic French dish of beef that's cooked with bacon and then, has a lot of wine, red wine in it. So I tested the recipe many years ago, made it with my halal substitutes, and it was phenomenal.
Amazing.
I don't feel like I missed anything.
What do you think of the comparison between the beef bacon and the turkey bacon and the original bacon? I mean,
well, beef bacon is going to have a lot more fat on it. Turkey bacon is a lot more lean. So, for example, you can use beef bacon instead of oil. So when you're cooking, starting a dish like beef bourguignon, you could start out with small strips of or small chunks of beef bacon and not have to put much oil in the pan. But with turkey, you can't do that. So I use turkey more for like toppings on Hawaiian pizza, which is also in the cookbook.
Oh, cool.
So there's a lot of really delicious recipes that I tried to pick the classic, the best recipes in each cuisine that I loved and wanted to cook. Like pina colada. Everybody thinks that has alcohol, but we made a really good one. We tested that one way too much.
That was
a favorite in our test kitchen.
Who's usually the first to taste your recipes?
Who's the first?
Yeah.
Besides Carlos? Me? Yeah, my husband. He's the first. He's the first, I would say. If I have any help, a recipe, you know, a kitchen assistant like I did for this book, she was great. She was a former student of mine. A young girl, she wasn't married yet at the time. And I told her, you know, it'd be great for you to learn some of this stuff, won't it? And, she was wonderful. She didn't really know how to cook, but that was the perfect person to have because we could really make the recipes so, easy that anyone without a lot of kitchen experience could come in and, you know, learn how to make the recipes. And make them successfully, because this isn't about intimidating anybody. This is about inspiring people to pick up the recipes and say, I can do that. I can find the ingredients and, you know, and gain some confidence in the kitchen. And so.
So I want to know if you ever thought about doing fusion cooking where just different cultures, blending them together.
Well, I've been told that I do that a lot at the table. I mix, you know, Italian stuff with Middle Eastern stuff, you know, and sometimes Mexican. And like, what is going on?
Mixing Italian and Indian cooking for me is just...
It's actually impossible.
Just amazing.
Oh, you've had it before?
Yeah, I mean, like pasta, like the way our moms make pasta with the way we prepare the ground beef.
I think there's room for everything as long as it's delicious. Yeah. I'm a little bit of a traditionalist, I will say, because I really love to preserve classic dishes, but... I'm very open to trying other things, like being, you know, raised eating pasta a certain way with sauce. I never thought in a million years I would ever put yogurt on my pasta.
Wow.
And I had a Turkish friend in college who, you know, just said, instead of cheese, put yogurt on top. And I thought, oh my God, if my grandmother could see me now, she would just say, you know, what's this craziness happening? But I tried it and it was delicious. And apparently that's how they do it in Turkey. So I think you always have to be open.
Cool.
So you mean just delicious. Like when it's done, you just put a layer on the top and that's it? Or
you just drizzle some yogurt and a little bit of oil. And I love eating pasta like that. Now, I can't do it really in, it, you
what
know.
What culture is that?
Turkish.
Turkish.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Cool. Wow.
So, I mean, I think we just have to be open, right?
Yeah.
Certain things shouldn't be fused, I think. Yeah. I'm not really big into, like, the nitrogen cooking.
Yeah.
I want food that's real. I'm not really big into, like, you know, cutting it into sizes that you can't even see and you don't know what it is. And, you know, exactly. I kind of want to know what I'm eating.
Do you take on students?
Do I take on
students? Yeah, do you teach?
I teach some classes sometimes. I do cooking classes.
My daughters went to one of your classes. You had like a little shop, a little workshop that you set up.
Okay, yeah. Sometimes I do that.
They got these cute little chef hats, and it was really adorable.
Oh, your daughter. Yeah, yes, yeah. Yes. I have a picture of her, actually, on my website with her. Yeah, yeah, I remember that. That was when I did the book tour for Summer Ramadan Cooking. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
So when's the new book available?
The new book is set to publish July 12th. So
July 12th, everyone.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Ready. Agate Publishing out of Chicago, they're taking on the task of, you know, helping get it out into the world. So real excited about that.
How do people get in touch with you?
Best way is just to visit the website, myhellokitchen.com, or go on our Facebook page, facebook.com/myhellokitchen, and can send messages there. I try to
click like on her webpage and subscribe. Just, do you have a YouTube thing or?
I do have YouTube. I'm still working on getting some more videos up. I'm a little camera shy. I don't know why, but I need to do more of that. I'm pretty active on Instagram. I try to, people like to see what's going on from, you know, day to day. So I try to do a lot there. Cool. And then Pinterest, we have a lot of our, you know, recipe ideas on Pinterest too. So I try to be everywhere I can. Yeah.
And the handle, I'm guessing, is at My Halal Kitchen.
Everything, yeah. Pinterest.com/MyHalalKitchen. Same with Instagram and Twitter. And
the book is available on your website?
So, yeah. Well, there's information about the book on my website, but it's available through our publisher at Agate, AGATE.com. But also Amazon US, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, Amazon Japan, which is really interesting. So, awesome. Yeah. So inshallah, we'll be worldwide, I hope.
Inshallah, we'll have those links in the description. Sister Yvonne, jazakallah khair for coming.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for the cookies.
You're welcome. Amazing. Did you like them?
Yeah, these are what? Oatmeal chocolate?
Oatmeal chocolate and
white chocolate,
chocolate chip and raisin.
Okay, it was raisin. Okay, yeah. Amazing.
Recipe coming probably in a future book.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, jazakallah khair. It's delicious.
Thank you so much for having me.
For anyone interested in sending us a letter or writing to us, you can reach us at themadmamlukes@gmail.com, themadmamlukes@gmail.com. We also have a Twitter and Facebook handle at themadmamlukes. Jazakallah khair for listening. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.